August 16th meeting to order. It's going to be a good night. So I'm going to ask Commissioner Ron Wesson to lead us in the invocation and pledge.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Join with me in prayer. Heavenly Father, and eternal God, Lord, we bow our heads in humble submission to you. Father, we come this night to say thank you. Thank you for all of you that you have blessed, God. You've given us so many opportunities. At least the London, Lord God, is just to be able to be here and to be well. Father, we thank you for the opportunity to serve, not only to serve you, but to serve the citizens of beautiful world. But God, we ask that you give us the kind of leadership skills and strength that we can do the very best job for the people here in this county. They deserve it, and we want to be able to be those leaders and support them any way we can. But God, in the last year and a half, there were so many challenges to not only this community, but to our country. But God, we know that you are the author and the finisher of all good things. But God, we ask that you see us through all of these challenges. I just feel that, you know, hopefully more will be brought to seek you, even in the challenges that we have. So Lord God, just continue to go with us, continue to bless us, continue to keep this community safe, and let us do all things that might please us. Yes, and bless us in the same way.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. Well, welcome everyone. We're going to start off with a roll call for those of the commissioners that are present. When I call your name, just say in person or present. Commissioner Ron Wesson.
Here.
Commissioner Ron Robertson.
Here.
Commissioner John Tripp.
Here.
Commissioner Greg Adkins.
Present.
And I'm Chairman Lee, and I'm present. First on the agenda, we have public comments. We have a 3-minute public comments session. Are there any public comments?
All right. Chair Lee, there are no public comments at this time.
Thank you. I will remind those listening that there is another opportunity at the end of our meeting. So next on the agenda is the reports and appointments, presentation of resolutions to the Hard Hill League state champions and runner-ups, the Shy 15U, you and 10U. You've all had a chance to look over these resolutions. Are there any concerns, or we'll go by acclamation if there's no concerns. So we are being joined by our champions of the 15 and under girls and their coaches.
Come closer. Y'all can come closer so they can see you and present you.
Yeah, any parents that would like to join us, please come on.
Don't look right on the mic.
So the resolution that we are signing tonight says resolution recognizing that the Shy 15 and under All-Star softball team for winning the Tar Heel State Championship. So whereas the Shy 15 and under All-Star softball team is a sports team comprised of youth in Burton County, including, please if I mess up your name, Colleen Ashby, Morgan
Backus,
thank you, Lindsay Bazemore, Alexis Dickerson, Marley Carroll, Courtney Cogger, Bailey Hughes, Riley Phelps, Emma Smith, Claire Smith, and Lauren Taylor. And obviously, not everybody is with us.
Volleyball game.
They're dedicated. The dedicated coaches of the Kashaw 15 and other All-Star softball team include Steve Ashby, Jennifer Ashby, Wes Hughes, and Ernie Cogger. Whereas team sports play a vital role in teaching and developing character and teamwork skills. Whereas the Shy 15 and under softball team has won the 2021 Tar Heel League State Softball Championship. Whereas the Burton County Commissioners wishes to recognize this outstanding accomplishment. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the Burton County Commissioners does hereby congratulate the 2021 Kashaw 15 under All-Star softball team for winning the Tar Heel State Softball Championship. Be it further resolved that the Burton County Board of Commissioners does further congratulate the team members, coaches, parents, volunteers, and supporters of the Kashaw 15 and under All-Star softball team. This resolution is signed the 16th day of August 2021 by the Burton County Board of Commissioners in a meeting duly assembled. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. So girls, would anybody like to be spoke? Oh no, I'm going to let us see your trophy. That's probably cool.
Yes. Since they couldn't be with us, we thought we'd bring a part of them with.
Yeah.
Why don't we stand right here in front and you can sit?
Can you all just stand in church seats?
Okay. And then we'll stand in front.
Okay, I'm count. One, two, three. Get one more. One, two, three. Got it. Come on. We got a lot. There's some more here.
Well, welcome, girls, to Burton County Commissioners meeting. We're glad to have you all. What a great accomplishment. accomplishment you've had at the softball game. So I'm going to read very quickly this resolution, just because you didn't get to hear me. So resolution recognizing the Shy 8 Thunder All-Star Softball Team for winning the Tar Heel State Championship. Whereas the Shy 8 Thunder All-Star Softball Team is a sports team comprised of youth and 13, including Hadley Colson, Ella Goodwin, Caitlin Hoggard, Chloe Hoggard, Sarah Hoggard, Logan Dermot, Heidi Matthews, Kayla Mazzell, Paisley Bay, Kaylee Thompson, Ella Warren, and Ellie, is that how you pronounce it? The dedicated coaches of the Shy 8 Thunder All-Stars softball team include Allison Hoggard, Amanda Hoggard, and Adam Colson. And whereas sports play a vital role in teaching and developing character and teamwork skills. And whereas the Shy 8 Thunder softball team has won the 2021 Tar Heel League softball state softball championship. And whereas the Brooks County Board of Commissioners wishes to recognize this outstanding accomplishment. And whereas the Brooks County Board of Commissioners wishes, now wherefore be it resolved that the Brooks County Commission does hereby congratulate the 2021 the Shy 8 Thunder All-Star Softball Team for the winning of the Tar Heel Softball Championship. Be it further resolved that the Berkshire County Board of Commissioners does further congratulate the team members, coaches, parents, volunteers, supporters of the Shy 8 Thunder All-Star Softball Team. This resolution is passed the 16th day of August 2021 by the Berkshire County Board of Commissioners in a duly assembled. Okay, so congratulations.
But there's one coach, Jessica Hoggard, she won't miss.
Oh, okay.
It was like to miss her. Isn't that right?
Did I skip her? Jessica, you got that?
Yes.
We'll get it fixed and get it to you. We want to take a photo with you, that would be okay. So if you could all come right here and line up.
Get one front and center again, okay? On three, one, two, three, one more, one, two, three.
Great job, baby.
No, they'll be next, right? I said 10 and under is next, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we're ready for 10 and under.
Come on, girl, from this side.
Well, welcome to our commissioners meeting. We have a resolution that the vice chair, John Tent,
going to read because I've already read two and need a break. But
first thing is congratulations to everybody, including the coaches, including putting time and these children like this and getting them up there and participating in the sports because, you know, they want to play. If somebody's got a coach and appreciates their dedication to the sport. Anyhow, resolution recognizing the Cashi 10 and under all-star softball team for outstanding performance. Whereas the Cashi 10 and under all-star softball team is a sports team comprised of youth in Burtie County, including Hallie Mazzell, Sydney Phelps, Marley Wiggins, Alyssa Powell, Mallory Devins, Kylie Sanders, Summer Brown, Kinsley Dunlow, Olivia Baysmore, Millie Johnson, Lizzie Connor, and whereas the dedicated coaches of the Cashi 10 and under all-star softball team include Martin Phelps, Rod Williams, and whereas the team sports play a vital role in teaching and developing character and teamwork skills, and whereas the Cashi 10 and under softball team achieved the status of runner-up at the 2021 Tar Heel League Softball Championship, and whereas the Burtie County Board of Commissioners wishes to recognize this outstanding accomplishment, and now, therefore, it is resolved that the Burtie County Commissioners does hereby congratulate the 2021 Cashi 10 and under All-Star Softball Team for achieving the status of runner-up at the Tar Heel State Softball Championship. Be it further resolved that the Burtie County Board of Commissioners does further congratulate the team members, coaches, parents, volunteers, and supporters of the Cashi 10 and under All-Star Softball Team. This resolution was passed the 16th day of August, 2021, by Burtie County Board of Commissioners in a meeting duly assembled. It's a standing lead of the chairperson.
My grandson played Ten and U for Dare County, and he was in the All-Star game. And all the parents, it's a lot of work just sitting out there in that heat, but a lot of work on these girls and the boys. So thank you so much for being with us. We'd like to have a picture with you, if that's okay. So if you'll line up right across here. Great job. Next on our agenda is the deobligation of Burtie County CDBG broadband grant by Kevin Richards, News Commission, Kathy Davidson, and the Werner Electric Corporation. So are you on the line, Kevin and Kathy?
Yes, we are. Thank you. How are you? How's everybody this evening?
Hello.
How are you, sir?
Doing good. I'll just give you a brief background on the project. The grant was funded with previously deobligated 2012 CDBG funding. The project was a $250,000 grant for the purchase of required equipment, purchase and installation of three monopoles, and grant administration. The project had delays, including but not limited to realignment of the location of the monopoles, which resulted in a completely new environmental review, the need to obtain approval for sole sourcing for the equipment, as Roanoke Electric uses one brand and the new equipment would need to be compatible with their existing system, to the impacts and delays related to COVID. In late spring, we were informed that the federal government was recapturing all pre-2015 community development block grant funds that had not been spent by September. And as a reminder, this grant was funded by deobligated 2012 funds. The project was bid out and it came in over budget by about $100,000. And that combined with the fact that the lead times for equipment and the monopoles was 8 to 12 weeks made the project impossible to complete by the deadline. Therefore, the board needs to de-obligate the funds. And while this is a disappointment that this grant will be de-obligated, there appears to be additional money being appropriated at both the state and federal level that could potentially provide funding for the project. So this grant will be de-obligated, but there may be other funds out there that we could reapply for. Thank you.
I agree with what Kevin said. I also want to identify that Roanoke Electric has received two great broadband grants from the state of North Carolina, totaling $2.5 million. One has been constructed. The second one is getting ready to be constructed starting in October. So it's a great opportunity for us to continue to provide broadband and expand the broadband infrastructure within Bertie County.
We need to take a vote on this. So I'll take a motion to deobligate the fund.
Make a motion to deobligate the fund.
For a second.
A second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
So next on our agenda is State of COVID-19 in Bertie County by Ashley Stute, Director of Policy Planning and Preparedness from the Albemarle Regional Health Services. And unfortunately, we are talking about this again. So Ashley, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am. Hate to join you all like this again, but hopefully we can share some good information. Can y'all see my screen?
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Mr. Betts sends his regards. We are dividing and conquering tonight. So I'm the lucky one that I get to be here with you all. So thanks again for having me. We do have another coronavirus update. As you can see here on this slide, this is our updated case count for the region. And unfortunately, we are really seeing more activity region-wide, statewide, and nationwide, as you all know. This is a look back over the last 6 months, and you can see that those new cases really are trending upward again. This is looking just at our 8-county region. And then this looks at the entire pandemic, so back when it started in March of 2020, and you can see this orange line here is actually our baseline. So for a while, you know, really since March, we have really been below baseline with our new cases. But unfortunately, these last few weeks, we once again are beginning to trend upward. With pandemics, it is not uncommon at all to see waves of activity. What we just hope is that our mitigation strategies will really come into play and impact the waves that we're seeing and really hopefully minimize the number of cases. Obviously, the wave that we had back in the January, December, February timeframe, we were implementing primarily non-pharmaceutical interventions. So now that we have the vaccine, we're really, really hopeful that with the vaccine and also with additional mitigation strategies that we will not see case counts quite as high as they got then. But again, it will definitely take all of us working together to make that happen. This is looking at the new case trend in North Carolina over the last few weeks. This is current as of today. And then, of course, we do have the total percent positive of our lab test. And once again, we haven't quite hit that 10% mark, but we are creeping up on it. We are definitely above the 5% mark as far as percent positive of lab tests to date. So we will get another update for this past week, and we'll report that out this coming Friday. As far as our vaccination status, we have really been working diligently on trying to get vaccines out. This data that you see here are numbers that we have pulled together from Albemarle Regional Health Services and looking at the number of vaccines that our partners have also gotten over the past few months. This is the partially vaccinated number, and then here we're looking at the fully vaccinated. There is some discrepancies between the ARHS data and the CVMS data that is located on the state website. So we just want to highlight that. Most likely, you know, this is kind of the tale of two cities, and we're probably somewhere in the midst of these two numbers or these two sets of numbers as far as what we're seeing as far as true vaccination rates. We do know that the state data is probably undercounted for a good bit because it does not include all programs. It is getting better, so it is actually getting a little bit closer to what we're seeing at our regional level. So hopefully we feel pretty confident that we are definitely somewhere in the midst. So we feel very confident that we're definitely in that 50% range for, you know, at least partially vaccinated up to fully vaccinated. So we're getting there slowly but surely. And Bertie County really is looking pretty good. You know, when you look at the regional comparison and even the North Carolina comparison. So definitely good work there, but always definitely can improve. As far as the different variants, there's obviously been a lot of discussion about the Delta variant. And, you know, when we talk about variants and the mutations of viruses, that is something that we expect. And ultimately, what we are trying to do with all of this is minimize the opportunity for this virus to spread, because the more opportunity that it has to spread, the more chance we have of seeing this virus mutate. And they are sneaky little rascals, and they love to figure out how to really best infect their host and really cause more severe illness. What we are seeing with this Delta variant, as you can see on the left-hand side of the screen, is data from CDC. On the right-hand side of the screen is data from North Carolina, where they have actually been typing out the variants. And you can see the orange and the federal data is that new Delta variant, and then the red in North Carolina, and you can see how it is really taken over. Now, while it is true that we don't type out every single specimen, every single lab that it's taken, the way this is done is they do have sequencing that is done on a certain percentage of all tests, and partners that submit those specimens through a surveillance program at both the state and national level. And so this is how, you know, we type out all types of viruses, not just COVID, but flu, other respiratory viruses such as RSV and others. Delta is fast replacing the other variants that we are seeing elsewhere. What we are seeing, though, is that really almost all viral transmission is in unvaccinated individuals. The vast majority of those who are vaccinated, if they do get sick, they are avoiding serious illness, hospitalization, or death. This has become a marked trend with what we are seeing with the data. No vaccine is 100%. And so we know that the real purpose of the vaccine is to limit that transmission, limit that spread, and really protect you from serious illness and hospitalization. And we are definitely seeing success rates when it comes to that. In North Carolina, they have just issued some new data. They are actually saying that more than 4.6 million North Carolinians have been fully vaccinated. And as of August 5th, they've only identified 15,989 people infected with a post-vaccination case since January 1st. And that includes 523 hospitalizations and 92 deaths. This is preliminary data, but ultimately what this speaks to is that about 88% of all cases have been in people who were not fully vaccinated when they look specifically at that data, which really is a good number. And despite these case numbers really starting to peak, we are seeing deaths down by more than 70%. So that is really a good point as well. When we look specifically at our ARHS data, we actually pulled cases and new cases from May 1st to August 11th. And of those new cases that came in on that during that time frame, 96.5 had not been fully vaccinated. So that is definitely telling for our region. Another thing that we've noticed is that demographics. You can see that we've seen a big shift in the age range. Definitely, we are seeing more of our cases now in that younger population. So you can see that now we're looking at about 17% of all cases are in our 0 to 17-year-olds, where when we were looking at the January timeframe, we were looking at 8%. And 50 and older, we were looking at 45% of those around January, but now from May 1st to August 11th, we're looking at those are 28%. So when you look also and compare that to our vaccination data and seeing that the majority of our vaccinations are in our older populations, the last check that we did is we really only had about 9% of the 12 to 17-year-olds vaccinated region-wide, then that really shows that once again, those vaccines are working. Another thing that we wanted to highlight for you all is the risk of infection following vaccination. So CDC put this together, and we just thought this was a really good indicator of your risk following vaccination. So your risk of infection is 3.5-fold lower after vaccination. Your risk of getting ill, so actually having symptoms, is 8-fold lower. And your risk of hospitalization or death is 25-fold lower after vaccination. So some key take-home points about the Delta variant. Definitely transmissibility is greater. With the initial alpha variants, you know, that virus, if a person was sick, we typically saw about 2 to 3 people get sick. Now with this Delta variant, we are seeing probably about 5 or 6 people get sick from one person. So we can see that transmissibility is definitely increasing. We're seeing some increased severity, some indicators of that. However, the vaccine, especially those mRNA vaccines after the completion of the 2-dose round, is still very effective, very more high 90s as far as their efficacy. And again, we're seeing that very rapid global spread. So as far as our mitigation strategies, obviously we have the 3 vaccines. Your local health departments, that Vertee County Health Department, we have all 3 types of vaccine. And so we are more than willing to set your appointment or work with your agency or your community group to be out there and help give vaccines. We're working with our school systems. We have a great partner with Vertee County Schools and others. Obviously, you know, the benefits of getting the vaccine, I think we've really highlighted that through this presentation, but it truly does make an impact as a way to really build that protection. And I even had a question this past weekend that said, okay, well, if I've been infected with COVID, does it really make a difference if I get vaccinated or not? And there are some case control studies that are indicating that your risk of getting infected if you do not get the COVID vaccine, if you've already had COVID, is about 2.3 times greater. So, you know, still, even if you have had COVID, it is still important to get the vaccine, because what we are seeing with the vaccine is it is standing the test of time for severe illness with the different mutations of the virus. We also know that face masks are very effective. Numerous studies conclude that outside of the healthcare setting, it reduces one's risk of being exposed to COVID and transmitting. We really highlighted the source control over the past year, but there have been additional studies, and there's a link here that really highlights all of those different studies. I think there's about 6 pages of studies really showing how masking does help prevent the risk of exposure. And one thing that we talk about through all of this is the layering approach. So, you know, nothing is 100%, but the more layers you put on, so vaccination, wearing your face mask, limiting your exposure and your distance to others, hygiene, all of those things combined can really improve your chances of not getting sick. When we look at physical distancing, you know, we talk about the 3 feet versus the 6 feet. 3 feet really does reduce your risk of spread, and then 6 feet doubles that protection. Hand washing, you know, that's a public health rule right there. We got to do that good hand washing. And then that layered strategy, that pre-vaccine study. So this isn't even taking into account the vaccine. This is solely social distancing, wearing a mask, and limiting duration of contact and hand washing. So when you add in that vaccine component, you're really increasing your protection levels. Not going to spend a lot of time on this, but really this is just a reminder, and I wanted to make sure you all have these slides. Isolation and quarantine, the difference between the two. Isolation is for those who are sick, quarantine for those who have been in contact with a sick person. You see here, isolation and quarantine has not gone away. I think when some of our restrictions went away over the summer and we have a little bit more movement, some of the confusion has set in about, well, you know, we don't necessarily have to isolate or quarantine, but still that is a key mitigation strategy as well. So if you're sick, we will ask you to isolate until you can answer yes to all three of these questions. Has it been at least 10 days since you first had symptoms? Are you 24 hours without fever? And are your symptoms improved? These are the things that actually designate whether or not you're a close contact. So if you are designated as a close contact, we do ask that you quarantine. Really, the 14 days is the gold standard, but there are options based on some science and transmissibility data that can give you additional options for quarantine, and our public health staff will reach out and help you with that. And then also an exception is if you're fully vaccinated, then you do not have to quarantine. We would ask that you wear a mask and that you do get tested about 3 to 5 days after exposure. But really, that's just for your precautions. But if you have been vaccinated, you do not need to quarantine. We also wanted to provide some additional guidance resources. You know, there's a lot of questions about the safety and efficacy of the vaccine and the reporting systems and different vaccine trials, as well as, you know, the different community transmission colors and coding that the CDC has started quoting and citing in their different briefs and that type of thing. So we wanted to make sure you all have those. All right. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you, Ashley. Yes. The very first slide you showed, I think it was either 45 or 54 cases per 13. Is that as of today?
Yes, ma'am. So that is your current active cases. Let me apologize for the backtracking here, but let's go back and see what that number was. We did have quite a few cases feed in over the weekend. I think we had nearly 100 cases feed in Friday into Saturday for the entire district. So Bertie, honestly, they had been a little bit lower in some of their new case trends. And so what I have noticed is that now Bertie and Hertford, they were a couple of our late bloomers, so to speak, as far as some of these newer cases. And I think they're starting to catch up some. Still seems to be primarily community spread, and still also seeing definitely that younger population. So 50, 55 and younger, from what I recall.
Yes, as Commissioner Weston, there's been some talk about boosters for people with pre-existing conditions. Can you tell us where we stand in North Carolina about that?
Absolutely, yes, yes. So there has been new guidance that has been released from CDC that individuals who have severe immunocompromised conditions should get a third dose of the vaccine. So we have gotten our initial information from the state of North Carolina. They are in the process of updating the standing orders and putting the information and education together for our clinicians across the state. And so we do anticipate those standing orders and guidance documents to likely be released in the next day or so. And then we will be working to get that information out to all of our partners. And it will likely be, you know, it's mainly for the mRNA vaccines. So it's looking at those who have received the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine. And they would recommend that you get the same type of vaccine that you received for your first two doses. And so that is what we are working on. They also have to work on some of the back end logistical pieces, such as the documentation and ensuring that we can enter that third dose. So once all those pieces come together, then we will be administering those and getting that information out to all of our partners and our community members and begin making those appointments.
Do you know if all the vaccine providers are recording in that database? You gave me an electronic version of my card. Is that the CVMS database?
Yeah, so that is a requirement of any North Carolina vaccine provider. Where we have some glitches in the system is that the federal government also has a system that works with our pharmacies and other groups to administer vaccines. So if a provider has signed up through North Carolina to be a COVID vaccine provider, they are required to enter that data into CVMS. They are required supposedly to enter it real time, but we have seen some lags. And obviously when we were entering, you know, thousands upon thousands of doses a week, it was a little hard to keep up. We have caught up with all of those. We do know that there are some providers who that has actually been a bit of a roadblock in becoming a vaccine provider. So we're hopeful that when, you know, FDA approval comes to fruition and that process becomes a little bit easier, that we'll see more providers willing to jump on and help us with these COVID vaccines.
Any other questions?
All right. Excellent. Thank you all so much for having me. You all have a great night. Thank you.
And just for the record, Battle Beds, which is our health director, presented at our conference that we were just at. So, and did a phenomenal job. So, yeah, we represent well.
Next on the agenda is the presentation of the 2020 Adams, Thompson, Price, Scott, Adams. Mr. Adams, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
The floor is yours, sir.
Good evening, Chairman and Commissioners. I'm Greg Adams from Thompson, Price, Scott, Adams in Wilmington. We performed the June 30th, 2020 audit for the Bertie County. The first thing I'm going to go over, and I think everyone has a handout, is the audit presentation is some required communications. The auditor is required to communicate the following.
Greg, excuse me, Greg, for cutting you off. Let me get my IT to display the presentation. I thought you were going to share your screen, but we can just give us just a second. We can make it available on our screen.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Greg, I think we're ready now.
All right, I'm on page 3 where the title says required communications. Our responsibilities under generally accepted auditing standards, government auditing standards, OMB uniform guidance, and the State Single Audit Implementation Act require that we design the audit to provide reasonable assurance that the financial statements are free of material error and in compliance with government regulations. That was accomplished. There were no material errors. We're required also to perform all planned procedures and have complete access to both management and required information. That was completed. Our work was not limited in any way. We are required to communicate any significant deficiencies that we encounter during the audit. We do have a couple, but we'll discuss those at the end of the presentation. I have examples. Next page. We're required to communicate any adoption or changes in accounting policies. This year, there were no adoption or changes in accounting policies for 2021. We have a new GASB concerning leases. So there might be some changes in the 2021 financial statements around leases. That will be for the next audit. We're required to assess methods and evidence for judgments and estimates that are used by the county. The two main estimates for the county are depreciation and allowance for doubtful accounts on accounts receivable. Those two estimates were reasonable. We're required to notify the board of any significant audit adjustments or unrecorded differences. There were none this year. Next page. We're to communicate any disagreements on financial or reporting matters with management. There were none. Any consultations with other accountants, we would have to communicate that. Really, any consultations with any outside experts, IT experts, any type of experts. We did not use any outside experts. Communicate any major issues that were brought up with management prior to our retention. There were none. Next page. Any serious difficulties that, excuse me, the auditor encountered dealing with management, such as unreasonable delays, unreasonable timetable, or unavailability of client personnel, there were none. Any irregularities or illegal acts, any communicate the existence of any material irregularities or illegal acts determined during the audit, there were none reported. So those nine bullet points are required communications that the auditor is required to communicate to the board. The next slide is starting the financial overview of the audited figures. So a summary of some of the key figures from the audit. The total revenues in the general fund were $25,324,669. Total expenditures, $26,459,383. We had a net change of a loss of $1,134,714 for the year ending June 30th, 2020 in the general fund. The minimum fund out, the minimum undesignated fund balance as recommended by the local government commission is 8% of your general fund expenditures. So the 8% number is 1 month, basically 1/12 is 8%. So the LGC recommendation is that you have at least 8% in undesignated fund balance, which is equal to multiplying the total expenditures in your general fund, the 26 million, by 8%. So the minimum recommended fund balance is 2,116,751. The unassigned fund balance at June 30th on the audit was 284,275. So it's under the recommended minimum fund balance. Yes, sir.
Excuse me for cutting you off. And you have a slide farther along where you're going to show the. Let's see. Now I know we're not there yet. So I'm not jumping ahead, but you just mentioned something that I wanted to clarify.
Yes, sir.
You probably can't see it, but your slide that shows fund balance available as a percentage of general fund expenditures.
Yes, sir.
That should actually read fund balance assigned, because as you as you just mentioned, the 284 is unassigned, and that's not
what that's right.
Because then it's available, right?
Right, because it just depends. Like the committed amounts would be available. The only thing that's not available is the restricted, and unassigned is it's just a little bit different terminology. But that's right. There's several different ways to calculate the fund balance available versus unassigned fund balance versus the assigned fund balance. So the fund balance unassigned is 284,275. And then that's the fund balance, undesignated fund balance is recommended by the LGC is 8% of your general fund expenditures. That cleared up one?
Yeah, a little bit. I think we can do a little bit more talking, but I think, again, the unassigned is to, I agree, 284.
That's right.
That is 1% of our general fund but expenditures. But what we need to talk about, I guess, not don't solidify it tonight, sometime soon, is the available fund balance figure that we actually compare to that 8%, because it's not on the sign that we compare there. I know you say it could be, you know, somewhat close, but the unassigned is what we compare that to the 8%, right?
Yes, sir.
Available. It's just how you have to talk about exactly how you're going to calculate the available fund balance. I'm thinking we should be around the 5%. Of course, we know it went down from last year to 7%. But if you if we subtract our liabilities minus our total deferred inflows and resources, or vice versa, total deferred inflows and resources minus total liabilities. And that, I think, give us an idea of what our available is, and then divide that by the total expenditure.
Right. So that's where this chart is talking about unassigned fund balance. And then you're talking about fund balance available, which would be different. That's right.
Yes.
Any more questions on that? Okay. So then the tax collection rate overall was 98.11%, which is above the state overall tax collection rate. State average is 97.29%. The next slide deals with the Public Utilities Fund. Total revenues, $2,797,966. Total expenditures, $3,144,914. Net change or loss of $346,948. Net position, beginning of the year, $17.2 million. And the net position at the end of the year, $16.9 million, when we factor in the $346,000 change for the year, which the LGC on your audit, which you might not have them out, but the audit, you might not even have them, I don't know. The audit, really what they look at for the proprietary fund, for the public utilities fund, is more your cash flows from operations. And your cash flows from operations, which is on page 21 of your audit reports, is $731,013 positive. So they're more concerned about how, if you're generating cash flows from your operations rather than what the plus or minus is for the year for the public utilities fund. So the public utilities fund had a positive net cash flow of $731,000. So that's kind of one of the analyticals that the LGC is concerned about with the public utilities fund. So you should be fine. The next slide is just analysis of the cash and cash equivalents by year. So 2017, 18, 19, 20, 7.5 to 7.3 to 4.4 to 3.5 million for total cash that the county has. The next slide is the fund balance. The total fund balance is the dark blue, and then the light, the light blue is restricted committed fund balance. So last year we were 5 million. And 4.4 million was restricted committed, and this year's 4.1 million with 3.8 million restricted committed. The next slide is fund balance available as a percentage of general fund expenditures, and that's where I think Juan was saying it should say unassigned fund balance.
Greg, can you hear us? Can you hear me?
I can hear.
Our commissioners have a question. Commissioner, yeah. Your microphone.
It's
having a hard time. I don't know. We'll see.
It's on. Can you hear me, Greg?
Yeah, I can. Yes, sir.
Okay, great. This slide. At the end of 2019, in the dark blue, which is total fund balance, I can't quite see. The number is 5,278,950, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
End of June of 20, that's 4,440,414. 414, okay. So that's about a little over $800,000, right? Decrease, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so if I ask you, my understanding is there are three ways for that to happen, for a decrease in fund balance. Either we spent more funds that were budgeted in that year, either we received less revenue income than we anticipated.
Yes.
Or that we have not been reimbursed from some of the actual spend that we had. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if I said to you, can you give me a very specific list of all of those items that accounted for that decrease of $800,000 or so? How difficult would that be for you to do?
I mean, that would be something that would be outside the kind of the scope of the audit. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm sure if we needed to do that, would be an analysis of the operations. I mean, I can look and see that we were in budget with everything, but then the revenue side, like sales and services, I could see you budgeted 4.4 million and you only got 3.7 million. So that's $768,000 shortfall on the budget for that department, sales and services, for last year's budget. You were in budget with all your expenditures. So it would seem more like some of the, maybe the revenues were a little bit short and there's still money owed outstanding. I know that. I'm sure William can attest to that.
Those are two different things, whether it's money yep. or in fact revenues came in light. And if they did come in light, we obviously want to know where was that, right? And if there are things outstanding that we haven't been reimbursed for, we need to know that.
So that's correct.
You know, and in order for this to really make sense to us, we know that the numbers have declined, but we need a real, clear, detailed breakout of what caused that. Only way to prevent this kind of thing from happening again is know where it happened and right now we don't have it.
I agree 100% because this is a year old now. So this is now we're into the next budget year. You have to have detail. Those details should be asking for and be provided for you on a monthly basis. I mean, that's where you would want to be able to make adjustments is during the year, because this is a snapshot of June 30th, 2020. That's now a year old. So there's, nothing can be done about this now. You have to worry about 2022.
Ms. Evans, if I could interrupt you for one second. So I'm being told that our finance director, William, can give us that information.
Yes, I would think you could, yes.
We have asked for that information and have received some along the way and have made some adjustments. So thank you for that. We have looked into that and we'll continue to take a deeper dive. And make adjustments
along the way. So, any other comments or questions? I can
continue. We'll try not to interrupt, but hopefully.
Are you guys ready for me to go on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're on to the slide number 12, which shows the next page, which shows the two findings that we had, which were both related to Medicaid. So the first one here is that there were 44 technical errors discovered during our procedures verification, excuse me, in the county documentation. 6 did not have child support referrals. 9 contained incomplete or untimely verification of facts. 13 did not have accurate budget calculations in NCFAST. 3 lacked sufficient required documentation. 9 did not have accurate resource calculations, and 4 contained inaccurate needs unit calculations. We examined 120 Medicaid applicants to redetermine eligibility. There were no question costs, meaning nobody of the first one here, the 44 technical errors, nobody received benefits that was not ultimately eligible to receive benefits. There were just technical errors inside of the files that we reviewed, 120 files that we reviewed. So of the 44 errors, one client might have had 2 or 3 errors in that particular file that just totaled to 44 errors out of the 120 files that we pulled. So that's the first one. Now, if you scroll down, you're on 2020, scroll down a few pages to page 18. This information is just the information that I just read to you about the findings that we had. The next one is involving Medicaid also. And there were 2 errors discovered during our procedures that inaccurate information was entered when determining eligibility. 2 applicant beneficiaries that received assistance for which the recipient was not eligible. So that's just a little bit more I don't want to say concerning, but a little bit more of an issue when you have, you know, it's not a technical error. It's an error that involved inaccurate information that was entered during the eligibility determination, and they were determined to not have been eligible. They should not have received benefits. So we had two of those. So those were the two findings that were related to the county for 2020. The one was a technical errors, and then the second one involving Medicaid was two applicants, beneficiaries that received assistance for which the recipient was not eligible. And those were out of the same 120 sample that we pulled, provided by DHHS. So that, those are the only findings that we had. I would encourage the board to, I think I've given Juan a contract. The sooner we can get the contract signed, technically we cannot do any work until we have a contract. So as soon as we have a contract, then we could start, you know, the first thing we'll do is this Medicaid audit stuff. And get that going, which is via Zoom, so we don't have to interrupt anybody, and then get William the list of the items that we will need for the audit so that we can get this done and have it in a more timely November, December timeframe that they could maybe help you guys make some decisions.
Greg, you should have that contract. If you'll check, get back with us to make sure that contract has been sent to you by William on Friday.
All right, thank you, Juan.
So, yes, you have a signed contract, and so we would hope that you could get started in a timely manner, so we're not late again.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. We'll get started ASAP. We're scheduled to be up that way for the couple other counties that we do up that way in the second week of September. So as soon as we get the contract back, we'll get with Juan and William and get you guys on the schedule.
I feel like I'm sitting here right there, understand, by the loss of one bill, $134,700, and why we have to find out about this. You know, I still don't understand clearly where that loss comes from. I understand how losses occur.
Mm-hmm.
Either we overspend. Revenue comes in less than we think.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, we pay for things that we don't care about. But the time to know that is not now. The time to know that is when it occurs, at least on a monthly basis, so we can then plan for that, make other reductions, right? Because here's what's concerning. You know, are we ever in a position where we pay a divorce or whatever, knowing that we're not going to get that money back or likely to get that in the time, and it would in fact affect the audit? Do we consider that when we pay things in that regard? We have the flexibility. And what happens when revenue comes in lighter? What are we told that as a board? What are we told that there are different? Now, I do know quite often what we do here is when we have to pay things. But
right.
Mm-hmm. But you know, sometimes we say things like, well, you know, lap salaries will take care of that and all this kind of stuff. Listen, you make a budget for a reason. It's a balanced budget. Something comes in, we have to pay $50,000 for, we should, in my opinion, immediately adjust our budget by that $50,000. Because we're not sure what's going to happen in terms of lap salaries or not, if that money's going to be there. We should be adjusting the budget because we know that we spent money we did not have.
I got a question also. The Golden Week grant we got for the library and the Walker Extension, we would have to pay the bill and then get reimbursed from Golden Week, correct? So quick. And that was what sometimes I think, like 69 days. And then with dealing with COVID, it was longer than that, but it was because they had issues with reference to personnel and shutting down. Did we run into anything like that? I think our first draw that we had for the library was $1 million, and we had to pay that before we could reimburse that. Okay. Again, then we could have another draw coming right behind that. And depending on the days that these draws coming in and going out, would have that fund balance?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, because you and I had that discussion.
Yes, we did. And so
we, you and I had discussed that also. Because I was curious about what the draw factors were. And I think on the Golden Leaf grant, they give you a certain percentage up front, correct? This one they did not.
You can get a certain percent up front, probably like a half of it, where you can draw each time, but to 80% of it.
Once you
80%, you didn't get any more until it was complete.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is that we received the bill from the contractor. We paid the bill.
Right.
We filled the paperwork out for Golden Leaf, send it to Golden Leaf, and Golden Leaf has to cut a check back to us to reimburse us if we took out fund back.
John, I think you didn't hear all of what we said. We have the authority to get up to 80% up front.
I know, but.
But that's per request.
Right, absolutely.
But, you know, I pay the bill, send the bill in.
But did we do that?
Yes.
We got 80% of that money up front.
Yeah, but in 19 was the year that it became a problem. 20 did not really affect us that much.
Okay.
Back in 19, I had a big deficit there because the money did not come in until July.
This is 20.
But this is this odd. Okay. But I have over $1 million worth of stuff that came in after June 30th that went in last year. Got $1.1 million worth of things that came in July, August, September.
What do you mean you got coming in cash?
It was like FEMA reimbursement.
But that was after July 1st, so it didn't go in the year it was supposed to go in. Is that correct?
It's an AR that goes back in that year, but it's not cash. And cash is where you start calculating the fund balance.
AR account receivable, okay. So you had that, but you didn't actually, you got the money after July 1st, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And it was only a few weeks after July 1st when you got it, correct?
Some of it, yes.
Yeah, I think it was like $873,000 or something of that nature. You might have a conversation, something like that.
But look, that happens to everybody. Every county has situations like that because if there's a lack, right?
Right.
Are you saying we have unusual circumstances?
Right. You have normal operating things that's going to occur like sales tax or whatever. It takes 3 months when that comes in. That's traditional.
Right.
This is above and beyond what I normally would see,
which was $1.1 million.
$1.1 million.
Okay. Now my question is going back to the Golden Leaf grant. Okay. And again, because I was talking to you about this. We would get a bill from the contractor, okay? We would pay the bill, and then we would send the paperwork to Golden Leaf to give us our reimbursement when we pay, correct?
Right.
That's how we did it. So if we had a $600,000 draw that the contractor was most requesting, okay, he sent you the paperwork, contractor with the bill, okay? You can write the check for $600,000, okay, out of our fund balance, because it's not allocated, it's not in the budget, okay, out of fund balance. And then you send the paperwork to Golden Leaf, send you your reimbursement of $600,000, correct?
Yes.
Okay. At any time, could any of that cross the lines of the June, July, things of that nature? Because in construction, we were very careful when we were watching these things when it came to draw basis coming from stock exchange companies that we were working with versus payables, receivable payables that were going out, payables going out. But any of that fell in line to create an issue because as you got that $1 million draw or that $1 million bill up front from the contractor, probably within 60 days after that, you were getting a double, probably about $450,000 to $500,000, is what I'm guessing.
And if that money of $1 million hadn't got back in deposit yet, and then you had $400,000, $500,000 going out on another bill that you got to send the Golden Leaf to get reimbursed on.
I understand that, but when did I give you right to say that Golden Leaf allows us to ask for up to 80%?
Now, you can send in requests to be reimbursed up to 80%.
But you got to show the contract.
At 80%, right? you can't request any more until the project's complete.
I understand. When can you ask for that 80%? Only after the invoice comes in? Okay. And you ask that up front.
You could. There was a stipulation that you could ask for something.
You can ask for it.
But they are. I don't think the dude might have to or something. 25%.
It's 20%.
Or you request it and you paid it, and you could get up to 80% reimbursement.
I'm dealing with it right now, talking with them about money for the teacher house. So you stay ahead of the pace, right? So you then turn in that invoice, you then ask for money up front again to keep you ahead of the pace. Because what if this $1.1 million is cost for us to end and we don't have the money? What happens in a real emergency and we don't have money in front of that? Because we just are waiting on money that, yes, owed to us, but who knows when we're going to get it. That was explained to me from Golden Leaf as the reason that you asked for a portion of it up front, and you keep asking ahead of what the invoice is.
I know for a fact when we visited Westbrook City County, we had 20% up front. That was the up front money. We requested the up front money, correct?
We requested the up front money.
William, what is on your list?
Most of it's reimbursement for FEMA, and then the reimbursement for the EMS station that we finally got this year. The ambulance, the settlement, the Medicaid settlement, and you got to get soil and water technician when he comes in during the year. It was kind of, it didn't come in until July. These are the things that added up like $1.1 million worth of stuff that I did not get cash in as of June 30th.
But typically they would have been in by June
30th. Usually I would expect them to be in. Now the FEMA, I never really know where that's coming in, but we spent it last year and we're doing AR to put it back in last year because that's what we went to.
Again, going back to my question, could that have created some issues for us by time?
It could have, it created issues for us in 19. It did not create any issues for us in 20.
Okay, but in 19, it did create
an issue. It did create an issue in 19.
Okay, because that means that money wasn't back in there for the draws that were coming in. Okay, so we got hammered. Okay, and what's your answer to the question?
Yes, and I thought the board, if we were all aware of it, that 20 was going to be a year similar look to 2019, wherein we spent, had several big calls that year and did not receive reimbursement for those calls within that year, which is why we're kind of in the situation that we're in.
Because we were not reimbursed.
Partly, correct. We were not reimbursed in the same fiscal year.
And the timing was different or wrong as far as paying one of these draws going for the going out here to the library as well as extension. We could easily be $500,000 or $600,000 shorter.
It'll be, yes.
Okay. Yes.
And I don't want to use the million dollar number because I don't know what that was, but it doesn't matter.
That was kind of in the early stages when it first started.
And I don't know what month we started on, but I think it was somewhere around March or April, one or the other.
19.
I think. Okay. And even if it was, it's 3 months out to get your money back. You're still talking 90 days. You're in July before you get your check back or the end of June, one or the other. But you're going to have another draw because of the way construction works, which those draws on some building like that, they're going to be anywhere from $400,000 to $500,000 or better.
Remember when we got down to almost halfway through the month, right? Of the year, we said, hey, would it be nice to be able to get a monthly report so that we knew where we would stand, right? And we talked about that. Tell me when, in any of that discussion in that last 6 months, that we anticipated being our fund balance dropping to 1%. When did that happen?
For 19.
For 20.
Correct.
This my balance dropped $1.1 million at the end of 20.
Well, to answer your question, those are reports that we usually get. Those don't really, they show the general fund. They don't really show the fund balance. However, during 1920, I think we talked about several times the amount of money, over $2 million, being allocated just for operating expenses, not any big projects, just in order to balance the budget. We talked about that. On top of that, there were instances where money was allocated for things that the board could be or wanted to do, such as schools, the supplements. That type, those type of things that they're not budgeted for, they come out of fund balance. Yeah. So whereas we did not talk about all those issues each month, I think we were all aware that our fund balance was going to reduce, again, because of the continuous appropriation just to balance the budget on top of unbudgeted for expenses that we covered.
No discussion. They even came close to say that the impact of just what he said was going to drop on fund balance. Or it is now to 1%. No. I heard. Money's still going to come in.
Estimate of about $800,000. My crystal ball estimate was around $800,000.
And we knew that they were waiting for that money to come in, right, Quick? Well, where's the other $300,000? And I mean, if we're waiting for the money, I'm just saying. I sit on a lot of every month to get a statement that shows when we overspent every single dime that was not in the budget. Open revenue for that month came in like open numbers funds outstanding, and it's very crystal clear. Very crystal clear where we're staying. My concern again, as often as we have disasters and things. Yeah, because remember when we started pushing, because we knew that we were out of this, we would do $800,000, and we made some significant pushing, got us some more than money. If we had pushed, I don't think we would have got us. And I'll give the chair a lot of credit for that. And we got that.
Mm-hmm.
So you, if you don't know it, I mean, to the point that you know the impact to the county, and we're not talking about it on a regular basis and see it on a regular basis. It makes it hard to did anybody think, I'm going to just ask a question up to the board. Before hearing that we were at 1%, anybody just think we could be at 1%? How about it?
And the 1%, as I was clarifying with Greg, that is misleading. Again, that is unassigned. I'm going to go back because we didn't catch that before. But
we had the same situation last year. We had it at the wrong place.
Exactly, again. Because it was calling available.
Exactly.
Unassigned.
And I think it was 3.4.
So our available fund balance is not 1%.
Thank you.
It is not. Our available fund balance is not 1%.
It's not where it ought to be, but it ain't that low.
Correct. It is not. That is unassigned.
Did you say 5.7?
Upon my calculation, but I'm going to go back and we're going to meet and talk with Greg, and at the next meeting, or sooner than the next meeting, we'll be able to tell you exactly what our available fund balance is, because,
but
again, the 1%,
yeah,
1%
is
unassigned.
You said, what it was at the end of this year? That's not correct. It's not going to be there.
I've had a couple of conversations with some commissioners, one-on-one, that maybe they would want a work session.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sooner than the next one that's scheduled.
Yes.
So is that still the case, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Yes, and we can show you every expenditure that took place during everything that came in, every expenditure that took place during 1920. So that would be easy to calculate and see exactly where we are.
The 25th was mentioned to me. If that would give y'all enough time to do what you need to do. The 25th of this month. Yeah, next week. Would that give you enough time for you?
Yeah, I can run. And then show you revenues. You're also going to bring revenues that you receive after the fact that you should have gotten. You know,
other than the ones that are no operating, I didn't bother bringing them over to
you. Can you also bring the draw schedule, okay, that we have on the library the day the checks were written?
That affects us often, yeah.
Because as you said, yes, that can affect us also.
It could, yes.
Absolutely.
It didn't in 20, but it could have.
But in 19, yes, it can.
19, it did.
Let me ask you this. Well, 19 is in June.
But it would have been carried over at the end of the 19th.
Yes.
Yeah. So it would have carried over into the 20th.
This is July of 19 through July. June through 20.
It could have happened.
Correct. Correct. This is June of 19th to June or July 1st.
July 1, 2019. July 30th.
Exactly. So that's the spread. That's where it's at. So that's the reason for the draw. And Williams said, yes, it did affect us in 2019.
Here's the effect. This is where it gets very confusing. AR was done. It was put back in 19. So it's accounted for. But when you go to look at the fund balance, I don't have cash because the cash has not come in yet. That's where it hurts because they look at cash on hand. And I don't have a cash on hand. I won't have a cash on hand until like a month or so later. So that snapshot that they take, looks at cash I have in the bank at that particular moment.
And Golden Leaf, it could be 90 days, right?
It could be 36 to 90 days.
Yeah, because you paid it, hypothetically, in 2019, we're going to say August, okay?
But as far as record keeping, it's in the 19-year what belongs.
That's exactly right. It's in the 19 year. It's not in the 20 audited year.
Right. But the fund balance that everybody wants to look at is not in there in the cash where they're trying to calculate it off
that. And I understand that. I get that. But it's not in the invoice.
Why I'm saying this $1 million here is in the 20 what it needs to be. But when you look at fund balance, which draws down that 1%, that's almost $1 million there of cash that comes in a month or two later that's extraordinarily above what we normally operate. That should have been cash that we should have hooked there by June 30th.
So I think you're always going to have some of that, but I think what you're making a hope is that there were some extraordinary large amounts that affected us, because you're always going to have some. So I'd like to see what those are.
Yeah, and that's what I'm pulling out. If I'm not touching sales tax and stuff like that, landfill, I know that's going to come in a month late. All that stuff is regular normal operating stuff.
And then the question is, once you do that, is there any way to mitigate that on an ongoing basis? Maybe there isn't. But if it isn't, you know, we've got to make sure that when other new things show us where that would be.
And one of the things that the auditor said, which I don't necessarily agree with, we're talking about showing on a monthly basis, I will not know that I'm not going to get the money by June 30th until it don't come in June 30th. It's going to be hard for me to say I'm not going to get this money or I'm not going to get this pot of money until July 1st, and I say I didn't get it.
No, I think you said you're right, but on a monthly basis, if you have it in or you don't have it, you only count what you have in.
Yeah.
What else is outstanding? Right? We just need to know on a monthly basis. We kind of get a monthly spreadsheet. How much is outstanding? Right? Because, you know, if we look like we're being decreasing again by a big amount, and that money's still out there, so we know it's coming at some point, right? May not come in that fiscal year, which if it doesn't, we end up like we are now. That's a part of it.
May I say one other thing? We knew that 20 was going to be another big year. Part of what y'all did as a board was make sure that we budgeted 21 and 22 without any fund balance allocated. I do feel like 21, we're going to turn the corner. I'm projecting right now, and I'm going on record saying 21, I think you might see about $1 million put back in for balance.
Because we cut 5% in the prior year, and we did this budget with no use
of phone miles. I think even though 20 looks bad, it's going to make us look bad, I think 21 is starting to be a turnaround.
And we've got some funds at sand, too.
We've got some funds that have come in also.
Right.
So we've got a lot of money. We've got $1 million worth of funds coming in, and we don't have
no major projects
coming out that was wrecking fund balance.
And every year that there's a new expense that we own, we say, okay, we're going to do it, and we know it's not in the budget. Mm-hmm. We need to adjust our budget to make up for that. If you don't, you're going to be that far behind. We can't say this stuff about, salaries might be there.
Has any accounting rules changed? I know they from committed funds to uncommitted funds. Has that changed?
okay? Remember when they used to include committed funds as eligible fund balance? Remember that? And then they stopped.
Yeah, I don't know. We have an auditor that changed that. Said it had to be
auditor had changed because the state said that he couldn't do that. Correct.
General financial principles of government change.
Yeah.
Juan, could I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
This is the first time I've ever been to an audit. I read the audit. Can you get a paper copy of it? Look at it. Maybe the issue's all gone.
Absolutely. No, they have not. No, we have not. Not take responsibility for that. My concern.
Not any critical. It's just hard to know what the heck you're talking about.
Absolutely.
About PowerPoint.
Absolutely.
I think that a lot of the questions would be answered if we put to a paper.
They definitely need it.
Because I always ask the guy, do we get an unqualified opinion here? And obviously, there are two, what I thought was minor deficiencies, but I've read it as your attorney, like, look at.
Absolutely. That can be done right away. I would like to send a copy that is pristine and totally finished. And that's not what I think you have, as I was discussing with Greg tonight. But again, I will definitely send what we have.
Because I read a thing on the fund balance, too. As I understand it, mine was a lot closer to yours than his, because his was just unsigned. Yeah. And that's not what has to
happen. And that's not what they're using. So
I just want to look.
Absolutely.
All right, the 25th for a work session.
Yes. Okay. 9 o'clock. And I think we should meet in here. So if three of you to go to his office and get anything for us, he can do that easily.
Mm-hmm. 9 o'clock, August 25th.
Yeah, we can have any other items that we need to take care of. And we all need to have a settled mind on this.
Right. He did the same thing last year. And I pulled it to your attention. We said, that ain't right. I said, it wasn't.
Mr. Adams, are you still with us? All right, so next on the agenda is board appointments and appointments, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Our consent agenda. Let's take one. Okay. So number one, register deeds fee report. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Approval of the resolution for declaring the August 22nd, 2021 Miss Sally Surface Day. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Approve the interlocal agreement with Terrell County to provide extension services. Just Ward, if you have a chance to look those
up. I have. Almost exactly. I think it's the original thing that I wrote.
Okay.
Years ago,
so you're good,
I'm good. I don't concern myself with the number you're paying per hour. It's perfectly legal. I think it's what, $45, something like that.
Is there a motion to approve?
I make a motion.
All in favor say aye. Approved pre-audit policy for electronic payments. Would you like to explain this one, since I had a question about it?
Certainly. So when we had our audit with State Auditor Beth Woods a couple months ago, it was brought to our attention that we do have this, we have a policy or procedure in place, but it was just suggested that we make it an official Berks County policy. So the procedure has been in place. It was just not voted on as being a Berks County policy for all time.
I'll take a motion. Approved.
Second.
All in favor say aye. Approved project ordinance for tall glass of water. My question was, is this new money? And I was told no. So would you like to explain?
Oh, certainly. So we never officially set up the project ordinance for tall glass of water. We have money coming in from various grants, and now we have to start paying out money. And in order to do that, we need to establish this this project ordinance. So it had not been done yet, so that's exactly what it is. Setting up the funds so that it's just correct.
Second. All in favor say aye. Discussion agenda D, consideration of proposals for new construction appraisal services by tax administrator Jody Ray.
Good evening. Just so you know, there's a lot of feedback on the Zoom. It's hard to hear y'all.
Okay.
LaShonda's trying to get that fixed. So I could barely hear what y'all were saying, so that's why I walked over here. So, but they're working on that. Since I started here in 2001, the county has been contracted with Gary Piner to do our new construction. We don't have a contract on file for him that I can find. Mr. Ryan Vincent with Vincent Valuations has submitted an unsolicited proposal for his services. Mr. Vincent lives in Bertie County. He owns Evaluation Services that goes around and does reappraisals for counties. He does new constructions. He offers some other services. Mr. Piner charges $375 a day. Over the last 5 years, we've averaged approximately 18 days per year for new construction, which is about $6,900 per year. Mr. Vincent charges $400 per day. So if you're looking at the same amount of time, it'd be about $7,300 or roughly $430 difference between the two. I don't have a problem with either one of them. I know them. They're both very knowledgeable. Mr. Piner is doing new construction is usually by himself. Now, he was here doing our reappraisal. He had help, outside help with that. But for new construction, he's by himself. Mr. Vincent has a fairly decent sized staff that goes all over the all over the state. He does have someone local that stays over in Chowan County that could help us on an as needed basis. I was not actually actively looking for this. He has talked to me in the past about it, but he just out of the blue sent me a proposal. So I wanted to bring that to you and get your opinions on that. I would prefer really to go with Mr. Vincent, being that he is local. He also offers additional services that Mr. Piner doesn't, such as helping us with appeals or land values. When we do new constructions, we have one person that handles that. Once the field work is done, they bring it in, and that person has to sit there and enter all that information in. If we ever get to a situation where we're backlogged, he could send in additional help for a per-day fee, something that Mr. Piner doesn't offer. So I see a lot of benefit with that. He has worked with the county before. He, on his side business, he does the county got him to clean up the Bertie Beach when it first did that. And I believe he may have already submitted a proposal to the county manager to continue that.
Well, I think
The only question I would guess would be Mr. Smith, if or Madam Chair, if we would need a contract.
They're in the agreement, they're going to have to do a super group contract.
Right.
I think in writing that says the county's spending over funds again, and I think you need a contract.
That's something basic, Mr. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Based on the letter you got.
Right. I can contact him and find out.
Where I think he does, I know he's got
him. Yeah.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
This board has been big on the use of local folks to do local stuff. So
right. Thank you.
Item number two, request for use of tornado relief funds and update on citizens occupying the trailer camp.
Yes, I believe Commissioners Wesley and Robertson can bring me on their communication with the tornado survivor, Ms. Rosemary Collier, who's been trying to get reestablished with the home on a property. And will be incurring a few calls. And right now we have approximately $46,000 in the tornado relief fund. So I believe, according to the last thing I received from Mitch, the amount of funds that she will need are approximately $3,100, I believe. And so that is what, and if you all want to talk to that, I have to have some more updates about that. If Commissioners want to speak to that.
Got a call from another citizen who was a proper citizen who was supporting a company from his colleague. So, you know, six people that are still in the trailer, including his colleague. His colleague was using funds, $7,500, she bought a lot. $2,500, she got that money clear. $4,000 she spent, got her a used trailer. She went out there cutting grass and pushed more. And she kind of get the place cleaned up so she could move in so she could get off of that capital expense. She would earn credit. We went out and took a look, and I asked Robin, because Robinson, he has that experience. And he said, and Ricky Freeman and also Mitch, and for $3,100, I think it's actually probably going to be a little less than that, probably somewhere about $25,000, that is to get the electricity hooked up, needs a new water meter, which is going to come for about $1,100, and getting those things connected and the whole works, including cleaning out the place. We asked for not to exceed $3,100.
I'll second. Sure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Item number three, request for trailer campers by the North Carolina State Emergency Management.
Mitch was, and I believe he may be on on the Zoom. So anyway, I can get started. From my understanding, the state emergency management has requested three of the trailer campers that were donated to us to use for our tornado survivors. They would like to use them for whatever their needs are, and they actually requested that we give those to state emergency managers.
I'm here, Commissioners.
Yes, got anything to add to that?
North Carolina Emergency Management requested we possibly could, if we could give three of the campers back to the state, they had some use for them. And we wanted to start with that process with them. And then we have some other counties that are interested in campers also that would like to have them available or have other disaster situations. And with the amount of campers we have, we wanted to start with North Carolina Emergency Management, make sure they got their fair share of them. And thanking them for giving us the guidance to get those to come in during the tornado relief.
Yeah, I think we were blessed with these trailers, so we need to pay it forward and bless, you know, others with these trailers also. Is there a motion that we go through with giving three trailers to North Carolina Emergency Management? Is there a second?
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, Mitch.
Yes, ma'am. And can I add one thing about the infrastructure for the tornado relief money?
Yes.
That was spoke about earlier.
Sure.
I have one other mobile home that I found out about late last week that could probably benefit. All they need is water, sewer, and electric hookup. It's actually in Angeles Park. The guy owns his mobile home, and that's all it will take to get him out of the camper, if that's a possibility. And everything he has is already passed inspection pre-camper. We just have to have his mobile home inspected. And once we do that, we can get him hooked up, and then he can move out of the camper also.
Okay. Do you have a dollar amount for that?
I do not have a dollar amount, but it will be less than the $2,500 or the $3,100 estimated from Ms. Collier, because all the infrastructure is there. It just has to be reconnected. We will just be fixing connections that we broke to hook to the camper. It's pretty much, if we cut it in half, we'd put another coupling back in place and hook everything back up.
All right. Thank you, Mitch.
Let's make a motion to go forward with that whole summer with a max of $3,000.
All in favor,
say aye. Yes, I'm good. Before we move on, though, here, if I may provide an update, you know, we started out with 16 trailer campers. To date, we should be down to 5. And, you know, we just passed the year mark for the tornado, and we started allowing tenants to occupy the trailer campers shortly thereafter, probably beginning around September. So at this point, just to ensure that our citizens are aware that their time in the campers has to come to an end, I've been communicating with DSS, Ms. Perry, and some of the caseworkers. And I think it's important that we relay if they have been given opportunities, but have not taken advantage of those, then I feel like it's appropriate for us to inform them that they have a certain number of days, maybe 30 days or so, to show effort or to vacate the campers. If not, what we're going to see is this is going to be an ongoing thing, unfortunately.
Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
Have we spoken, you had an opportunity to speak with the caseworkers, all 5 places?
Well, and they're, yes, they've given shared their notes with me. And some of the, I can think of 2 different families or people occupying the campers, and they've been offered several different options and have been taken, should have been moved forward with either of those. And then there were a number who have just been totally haven't responded. At all.
Okay, have they compensated with maybe the housing authority? Any notes reference that? Because I would think that maybe if some of them didn't quite understand, maybe the social worker would reach out to the housing authority and see could they have the vacancies where that, you know, they could have, because we're saying that we don't want to put out a position instead of, you know, makes my homes, you know, without checking the project, the housing authority, and see they have a city that they can move into. And they won't move into it, you know, that's up to them.
But they've been offered several
places. Yes, I absolutely don't want to, I don't see anybody homeless, but I don't want to see anyone without a home. But yes, some of them have been given several opportunities for us.
And you have to look at them, because you're in the worst sense. You have to take care of each of them. I know a couple of situations that I think are, and express any interest, right? Any interest. So you got to look at each one, but I think we need to get the facts on each of those and treat them uniquely, right? Based on their response and what they've done. So maybe they do need to be connected to the house, right?
Sure.
But we got to make sure that there's a timeline that gets done. So they don't.
So moving forward, would you like to do the notes so that you can decide how to move forward with each? What's your
pleasure? Would be a good work session.
I would like to have a caseworker, but there was one that won't relocate.
Okay.
To see exactly what their position is.
Okay.
You know what they recommend, personally recommend. That they have more kind of action with those displacements that we had.
Okay. So, a discussion of upcoming events, blueberry preparation, ribbon cutting, and the 2021 Burkina Faso.
Okay. Commissioners, we were moving forward with both of these events. However, I wanted to take this opportunity in light of hearing what Ashley Stevens shared from Albemarle, and with the increase in cases we have with the Delta variant being here in Bertie County, and 95% of our cases being the Delta variant. Not to mention we are in an area of high community transmission, meaning we're in a state like many of the other states, almost all of the other counties in the state.
One county does not really.
Exactly, one still out there. So I see all that to say it's something that we should consider for you all to consider postponing the Blue Jay Recreation. Well, actually, both of these events. The last thing we want to do is see have an outbreak at a community hosting event. At the last Riverfest, we had over 1,000 people. But speaking to Anthony Rasko, who's on the Blue Jay Committee, has been involved with the planning. The Blue Jay Committee is on board because they were postponing the event because they could very easily see 200 people from the community show up on Saturday. So it's just something for us to consider. Again, we were moving forward, everything slated, no money had been spent, particularly for Riverfest, and the Blue Jay Committee has worked out, you know, where there won't be a loss to them, from my understanding. So again, it's for the board to consider. I'm sorry. Yeah, so at least a consensus so that we're all on the same page.
I guess you have a consensus that we will reschedule Blue Jay and cancel the Riverlands.
Yeah.
Okay. I will go to the Riverlands. 40 degrees outside. 3 hours. Commissioner's report. Commissioner Ron Robertson.
Well, couple things we talked about all night, but I'd be able to sure that was the call Vaughn, one of my great neighbors that set the job with USDA as their bomb loan officer, and he makes loans. So in the bomb, you know, needs money. Give him a call at 252-398-7855.
Commissioner
Trey. Commissioner Hack. Hello. Commissioner West. Just one thing. I wanted to thank the citizens and thank the county for allowing those who were able to go to the annual meeting of county commissioners in Wilmington. It was wonderful being the first time we've been together since COVID this week.
Yes.
I just want to give some kudos to our chair, who really has been extremely active in the association and part in several different parts of the association work. Someone who sits on the board, as I have for the last year. Burge County gets an awful lot of respect. I can't tell you, Chair, how many people said to us, you guys are doing great things in Burge County. Maybe you need to kind of toot your own horn. Maybe we need to be recognized like in the Association of Places. Because we've been doing some great things. I don't want to do that.
All day long.
So we are getting recognized, and I think it's the service that we give to the association and others. So,
thank you. So my list is kind of lengthy, but So in July, some of us attended the National Association of Counties, and I don't like to toot my own horn, but I will on this one. I was elected to serve on the National Association of County Commissioners Board of Directors. So I will be representing Bertie County at the national level, and I'll be representing our state on that board. August the 27th, y'all should have received your invite to Reaching Our Community Through Media at Elizabeth City State University. I plan to attend that. some of us attended the convocation this morning at the high school. It's the opening day for the teachers, and what a great event. It was very spirited, and the guest speaker was wonderful. Reverend Early did a great job praying over those teachers and staff members, so that was, it was truly a great event. At the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, our team won an award, and we will hear more about that, I believe, in, did he say September or October? They're going to come before
October.
Us. Yeah, October, in October, and present it officially to us. But we were mentioned for the North Carolina Agriculture Extension Award, so that was great for us when we mentioned. So, and then August 24th, which is next week, next Wednesday, we will be serving hot dogs, donuts. I'm hungry, y'all. Donuts and coffee to our veterans at. Yeah, thank you. Chiefs on the River here in Windsor. So any veteran, please come out and meet your fellow veterans, have some coffee and donuts, and we're looking forward to that event. There was also a film. Oh, 9 o'clock. Thank you for the veterans. 9 to whatever.
Are you going to be there?
Yeah.
Oh, the 24th. I'm sorry. It's the 25th.
Okay, don't skip. So Tuesday, the 24th, is the veterans. Okay. So there was a wonderful documentary done for Ronnie, past president of our association, Ronnie Smith. His initiative, which is resilience, food resiliency. I have sent that to the county manager. It is not complete, county manager, so they want to hold off putting it on the website or the Facebook page.
Okay.
He, Chris Walker, did tell me that they would be sending us the final copy.
Okay.
But, and I say all that to say that two of our residents, Jared County were featured in that documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy Copeland, that works with the extension, and Miss Lee, that worked, is at the Good Food, is their name Lee? Good Shepherd.
Freeman.
Miss Freeman. So they both did an outstanding job in that documentary. So we want to make sure that we make the citizens aware of that when the final documentary is done. Okay, so that's all of my report, I believe. Commissioner, they changed your phone.
Unfortunately, I'm out today because the general of Rookie Margaret. And the scrum to be called today, since we've got to be straight. And if we saw the survey board for, I know we had 10 years passed away this past weekend of COVID, and Julia Brandon, so what's the board members on there? You know, we can begin speaking from the group side. Strong, lost in there, I'm sure.
County manager's reports.
No report.
County
attorney.
We do need to go into closed session, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is it under all the general statutes?
Yes.
So general statute 143-318-11A3, 5, and 6. Do I have a motion to go into closed session?
I'll make a motion.
All in favor say aye.
Thank
you. Bring everybody in from the waiting room.
One moment, Charlie, bring them in. Everyone is back in the wait, out of the waiting room.
All right, thank you. So, County Manager Vaughn, would you like to go with, talk about what we've discussed and make a recommendation?
Yes, Shirley. We have recently been in communication with the Office of State Human Resources, and we learned that it is not necessary for the Department of Social Services to have their own pay schedule. And I would like to recommend that Department of Social Services employees be put back on the county's pay schedule as they were back in 2015.
Do I hear a motion? Go with the recommendation of the county. Is there a second?
Sure.
All in favor say aye. Thank you so much. Is there any other business? Well, we will recess this meeting until August the 25th for our work session.
9 o'clock.
At 9 o'clock.
Turn off my mic.